I invite you to join me in the response of invocation, which is in your order of service. We gather to seek, to find, and to share the promise of honest religion. And so it is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. Vulnerability more powerful than strength.
And a peace that can pass all understanding.
It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin together in song. I invite you to join me now in a time of prayer. When the uncertainty of life threatens to overwhelm us, may we find comfort. When the grief and loss of loved ones feels too much, may we find strength. When isolation in our lives seems impenetrable, may we find connection. When our brokenness seems irreparable, may we find healing. When we find happiness and hope, may we spread them to others. May we find meaning, inspiration, and wholeness in our lives. May others join us in our work toward the common good. When we stumble, may they support us. When we doubt, may they reassure us. And when we stray, may they guide us. Life is too large and too precious to journey alone. May we find the solidarity of others when needed. And may we be the strength for others when they need it. Amen. We seem to have been hearing for many years now that we live in a time of uncertainty. Recent events seem to only increase that uncertainty. The financial meltdown is the latest series of unpredictable events that we hear about, not knowing what the outcome will be and how they will affect us. The roller coaster of the presidential elections creates an uncertainty about our political future. Our worries about our jobs and retirement make us uncertain about our economic futures. The threat of unexpected illness and violence creates uncertainty about the lives of our friends and loved ones. And climate change raises questions about our very existence. We most certainly do live in a time of uncertainty. Yet I suspect that humanity has always felt that way. A common response for many people to uncertainty is to turn towards religion, sometimes looking for answers, other times an explanation, and often just comfort. The old saying goes that the only certainties in life are debt and taxes. While a religious response on the subject of taxes sounds really interesting, I'll leave that for another sermon, perhaps around April 15th. Religion has a lot to say about death, and in Christianity, particularly life after death. While life on this earth was uncertain, life after death was about certainty. You were going to hell if you were bad, and you were going to heaven if you were good. The threat of hell was the motivation to live a good life. Our liberal tradition has, I would say fortunately, moved away from such thinking. We are not concerned about much of what happens after death, and much more interested in finding truth and meaning in this life on this earth. To ensure a responsible search for truth and meaning, it is best to do this in community. At least, that's the theory. Many of us today feel lonely or isolated as our sense of community subsides and we have less contact with family and friends as we would like. Work absorbs much of our time and energy, such that our community ties become frayed. In the reading we heard earlier from Craig, Robert Beller was discussing the decline of community in the United States due to the emphasis on the individual. He says, our capacity to imagine a social fabric that would hold individuals together is vanishing. He blames economic individualism in partnership with religious individualism as the culprit for destroying much of our sense of community. He said this word at the 1998 Unitarian Universalist General Assembly. He knew his audience. Our Unitarian ancestors in the 19th century put emphasis on the individual experience and the individual interpretation of that experience at the centre of their religion. This emphasis on the individual continues to influence us today. Many people come into our congregations because they feel our communities support their own individual values. I know I did. Yet the choosing of a community to support my values still has a focus on the individual, me. Having a community support my values may be comforting, but are we challenged to grow as people? Does having our values supported help us find truth and meaning? The focus on the individual in our Unitarian tradition is similar to many other Christian religions in the US. This is why Robert Beller places Unitarian Universalism in the religious mainstream, though it may not feel like it to us. This conclusion may be surprising to many of us. It certainly was for me. He acknowledges that our social justice work is in the dissenting tradition, often against the dominant thinking. While I really value Beller's critique regarding religious individualism in relation to our movement, I think he is only talking about one half of our religious tradition, the Unitarians. Like many, he seems to have forgotten about the Universalist side of our movement. You know, that part of our name where people's eyes glaze over when you tell them what religion you are? I'm a Unitarian, you know, and it just dribbles off. You know? I notice it's around the second or third syllable of Universalist that people stop pretending to be interested. I believe Universalism is an important part of our tradition because while the thinking is still liberal, the centre is not grounded in religious individualism. This can help a balance to help balance the Unitarian centre of individualism. Opinions regarding the importance of the Universalist belief varies widely. Some leaders in our movement would dismiss it as irrelevant and answering a question no one has been asking for 100 years. This does not sound very promising. Other leaders see Universalism as a vibrant path forward for our movement in the 21st century. At the risk of appearing completely spineless in the matter, I agree with both views. Let me try to explain. Regarding why Universalism is answering a question that no one has been asking for 100 years, we have to go back 200 years. In the late 18th and early 19th century, the dominant Christian view was that due to sin, that all people were destined to hell in the afterlife, and only because of the death of Jesus would a small elect few be saved and go to heaven. This is a very difficult perspective for many of us to accept today, but the thinking was the dominant religious view in the US at that time. Universalism disagreed with that view and asserted that all people would be saved and no one would suffer endless punishment in hell. This idea is known as universal salvation, hence the name. Jose Ballou was one of the most profound thinkers and leaders of Universalism in the 19th century and is quite a character. I would love to have met him. He was from a farming background, had little formal education, and is described as rustic in both dress and diction. I suspect rustic was not a compliment. In his early days, Ballou was a circuit-riding preacher who had no church of his own but rode around on horseback, preaching in small towns and often debating other preachers, and I think arguing with anyone who would listen to him. Ballou's character thinking and evangelism defined the universalist movement of the 19th century. It's a story that shows the type of character that Ballou was, and shall we call them his persuasive tactics? He was riding the circuit and he stopped at this New England farmhouse, and the farmer was upset and confided to Ballou that his son was really not a very good person. He was a terror who got drunk every night and caused lots of trouble. The farmer was afraid his son would go to hell. "All right," said Ballou with a serious face. "We'll find a place in the path, on your son's path home. We'll wait there. We'll build a big fire. And when he comes along, we'll throw him on it." Remember, this is one of our most profound thinkers. The farmer was shocked. "That's my son, and I love him." Then Ballou said, "If you, a human and imperfect father, love your son so much that you wouldn't throw him on the fire, then how can you possibly believe that God, the perfect father, would do so?" I think Ballou would be a fun person to have over to dinner. I just wouldn't get close to the fire. But Ballou's basic premise for universal salvation was that human feelings were finite. Therefore, it's unjust for us to suffer infinite punishment. He's actually holding God to a moral standard. He no longer views God as a punisher of human feelings and believes people are trying their best to be in a relationship of love with God. For Ballou, God was not about punishment. God was about love. This salvation of all people was a radical idea because it destroyed the idea of a few people being saved from God's punishment and has a profoundly egalitarian emphasis. This gave all humanity a common destiny as opposed to the separation of the small elect to heaven and the large majority to hell. We all had equal worth in the eyes of God, not divided into the damned and the saved. To religious liberals like ourselves, the notions of heaven and hell seem like an obscure and not particularly attractive remnant from the past and has no significance for us. Who cares about heaven and hell when we have the uncertainty and problems that we have in our world today? A reasonable question, hence the earlier question, why is universalism relevant? It's answering a question that hasn't been relevant for 100 years. Ballou's insistence on the supernatural and otherworldly salvation is not the important part of universalism for me, but consequences of his answers seem important and revolutionary. For our religion's ancestors, notions of heaven and hell were part of their framework of meaning, finding meaning in their lives and death. Through this framework, the universalists found a common human destiny, therefore a belief in the equality of all people. This message had great appeal, especially to the less wealthy and less powerful. In the strict hierarchy of the 19th century society, I would imagine the religious elect were often seen as the elite in society. The universalist message had a strong appeal to the non-elite, who flocked to the universalist movement, making it the sixth largest denomination in the 1840, with around 700,000 members. For comparison, Unitarian Universalism today has 200,000 members. The message of radical equality of all people gave the universalist movement strong justification for their social justice work. Universalists were at the front of movements to abolish slavery, promote equality of women, establishing public education, and working to change prisons from places of punishment to places for reforming criminals. It was in their theology. Humanitarian concerns were foremost amongst universalists, such as Clara Barton, who founded the American Red Cross. Universalist members were primarily in rural communities and relatively poor financially. They really saw a conflict of interest between their religious principles of caring for others and their economic well-being. This is in contrast to the Unitarians, who were primarily wealthy and amongst the elite in society. Some Unitarians did take a strong abolitionist stance against slavery, but many Unitarians accepted slavery because they made much of their money from it. Their economic self-interest conflicted with their religious principles, and guess which lost. While 19th century universalist movement was still Christian, their uniqueness was the love for all humanity at the centre of their beliefs. This was not an individualistic religion which put humanity at the centre of religion. They put the love of humanity at the centre of religion. An important difference. While José Ballou's religious ideas had a profound impact on universalism in the 19th century, his personality, as you can well imagine, also left an indelible mark on our movement. While he often disagreed with others, he also tolerated a range of opinions. There's a wonderful example of this when Ballou was preaching at the church of one of the other universalist leaders. The wife of the church's regular minister so strongly disagreed with Ballou's sermon as he sent a message to the choir master, expressing her displeasure. Ballou finished the sermon and was about to announce the hymn, and the choir master arose and announced to the congregation, "I wish to give notice that the doctrine which has been preached this afternoon is not the doctrine that's normally preached in this church." Ballou listened attentively to the announcement, then said simply, "The audience will please take note of what our brother has said." He then proceeded to the hymn. So if any of you are unhappy with today's sermon, please let Brent, our choir director, know. And he will announce it at the end of the sermon, okay? I do not guarantee such a dignified response as Ballou's. I feel this story is very telling about Ballou's character. He was opinionated, but he created a tolerance for differing opinions that influences our movement today. He exemplifies the phrase, "We do not need to think alike to love alike." Religion was about high ideals and not his own ego. He engaged in his own responsible search for truth within the Universalist movement, and I believe our Unitarian Universalist movement is stronger for it. Universalism had a strong sense of human solidarity, people sharing a common purpose and responsibility. Solidarity is not a word you hear a lot in religion, but it's a good word. There seems to be greater intimacy about being in solidarity with another rather than just supporting them. Solidarity has a sense of working together for the common good. Support has a sense that you're doing something, others might agree with you, but they're not engaged in it with you. For example, when you're in jail, for some non-violent protest, of course, and someone comes to visit you, that's support. Solidarity is when the person is in jail with you. Perhaps that's not the best example of a common destiny. A relationship of solidarity means a passionate and intimate concern for the welfare of others. Think in your own life. Which relationships do you have would you describe as relationships of solidarity? Which relationships would you describe as relationships of support? Where do we as a religious community take a stand of solidarity with others? Our work in marriage equality, our anti-racist work that is done in many congregations, these are important things to consider. The deep-rooted concern for others in universalism comes from a universal love of others. I believe universalism, with its concern for others, is a powerful corrective to the religious individualism which we are often accused. Some people within the Unitarian Universalist movement describe universalism leading with the heart and Unitarianism leading with the mind. I see this tension between the passions of our heart and the reasoning of our minds as a healthy thing. The passion of the heart can help us reach beyond our own self-interest and emotional detachment to engage passionately for the welfare of others. Reason can prevent our passion from being misplaced, naive, or ineffective. We should not see the choice of Unitarian or Universalist heritages as an either-or choice. We can and do engage with both traditions, our hearts and our minds. What brought the Unitarian Universalist movements together was the causes we cared about, not shared beliefs. On many social issues, the Unitarians and the Universalists found ourselves working together on issues such as civil rights, public education, and women's suffrage. It was our actions, not our beliefs, that brought us together. Robert Bellin acknowledges this in that our social justice work is where we have been dissenting from mainstream religion. As I look today, the only area I see us showing religious leadership on social issues is on the issue of marriage equality for gays and lesbians. We do not seem to be showing leadership in other areas, such as environmental concerns, healthcare, economic justice, and immigrant rights. We are doing work in these areas, but I do not think we're leading in them. I'm not sure we even work in partnership with other religions who are showing leadership in these areas. We are a small religion. Therefore, working with others, even those we disagree with on some issues, makes sense on many issues. Do we as a religious movement play well with others? I wonder if our individualism has been institutionalized even in our social justice work. I am reminded of Denise Levertov's earlier words, "We have only begun to know the power that is in us if we would join our solitudes in the communion of struggle." The common thrust of both the Unitarian and Universalist movements was in the changes they wished to see in society. For the Universalists, this work was driven by a radical view of human equality and the faith in a loving presence for all people in the universe. That loving presence they called God. That idea of a loving presence that cares for us all of us, helps many to get through times of uncertainty. Sometimes that loving presence is family. Other times, a friend. Often it is a religious community, and sometimes a presence that one can't explain. Universalism placed that loving presence and love of humanity at the center of its religion. That was an act of faith and hope. It is also a challenge to us. Can we rise up to that challenge by loving others, not just those who are easy to love, but also those where it's difficult? Loving those who disagree with us and loving those who show us no love in return. That is the Universalist notion of love, and it's so challenging. Perhaps to guide us, we need to remember Francis David's famous statement, "We need not think alike to love alike." If we believe that and embrace its meaning, then we might be able to care for each other a little better today than we did yesterday, and care for each other a little better tomorrow than we did today. This might be transformational for us, our religion, and our world.